you're hearing that music, you know this is an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. We show up every time there's a fifth Monday and sometimes in between. Spiritual Perspectives, a program looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. My name is Scott Bartlett. I'll be your host today, and I'm glad to have you with it. This morning, we have a wonderful, delightful guest. I am so looking forward to this show. I've been busy reviewing materials and listening to stuff and finding out what's going on, and we're just going to have a blast. Coming to us live from Boston, Massachusetts. Our guest this morning, I love the phrase, was the first time I felt so far outside my comfort zone. This is our guest writing. I was in Paris and had just received news that the job and the place to live that I thought I would have for the next several months had fallen through. Very little money remaining, no place to stay that night, and a return plane ticket 3 months away. And I needed to be able to work to afford my next semester. This is a place where she shifted in her mind. Since that time, our guest has actually gotten herself a master's degree from, has gotten herself a master's degree at the World Learning Institute, has been an adjunct professor, has worked around the world, tremendous work in Africa, other work in terms of emerging rights and lack of rights, a tremendous amount of study while she has deeply involved herself in a study of what I'll refer to as deep inner healing. Her particular practices flow through the Christian Science Church, and we're going to move forward from there. So everybody, I'd like you to meet, this is Larissa. Larissa, this is everybody.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be with you.
Isn't it nice we got them all together for you like that?
Makes it convenient, yes.
We can just chat with them all at once. Cool. So first off, I have to find out what happened. There you were in Paris, you had no money, but you'd been studying an idea from Palms of whither shall I go from thy spirit, working truly from spirit and drawing yourself forward. So there you were in Paris, no money, no job, no place. I got to know the rest of that story right away.
Well, it sounds good. I didn't realize I had left it hanging when I sent it to you, Scout. But it was a very transformative time in my life. There have been many of them, but that was an early one. And I guess the result of that summer was that I found myself having to kind of take my life moment by moment, day by day, hour by hour, and sort of in general. And up until that point, I would say I had always been a very sort of type A planner person. Everything was organized. I had always had a couple of jobs throughout high school and college. I had always been extremely high achieving and organized and wanting to get a lot done and working really hard. And
that qualifies as type A.
What?
That qualifies as type A.
I think it was pretty type A. And so, here I am, and I find myself as a young person, and I'm in Paris, and all of my plans have just fallen through. And, so this in that context of that time in my life, it just felt like the whole bottom had been dropped out from under me. And the option, of course, that my parents were wanting was to come back home, and I really felt stubborn that I did not want to do that. I, number one, didn't have the money to do that. My plane ticket was for quite a distance away. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the money to fly me back. And so it wasn't necessarily an easy option to choose anyway. So, I remember packing up my stuff in the hostel where I was staying and thinking to myself, well, I've been here in Paris. I had been there for about 3 months, and I had been living pretty well on my own in the city, and I'd met a lot of homeless people and a lot of people hanging out in the subway, and I thought, if I have to go hang out in the subway, I'll be fine. Like, it'll be all right. I mean, the spot from Psalms and the prayers weren't quite the first thought. The first thought was, I'll be okay, even if I'm in the subway all night. And, I didn't share that with my mother or my father.
Yeah, that was
at home, but I definitely had that sense of just, I was going to be all right no matter what happened. And I wasn't afraid. I didn't have to be afraid of what could happen, and I could just grab my stuff and leave the hostel and trust that I could, figure something out. And so everything I had with me was on my back, and I, wandered around the city for a little while. And it happened to be a Wednesday, so in the Christian Science Church, all around the world, in any Christian Science Church, there's church services on Wednesday. There's meetings, actually, like church meetings or spiritual meetings every Wednesday evening. So I just wandered into the service that night, to the meeting, and there were readings and people stood up and shared different thoughts that they had spiritually and healings that had occurred in their lives. And it was a very inspiring service. And, you know, I wasn't getting any answers as to, like, you should go here, you should do this, you're going to find some money on the street. You know, I wasn't necessarily hearing those kinds of directions. But I was just being really filled with this sense of knowing it would be okay if I ended up on the street or wherever I was. And so as I proceeded to leave after the meeting, I was chatting with some people I'd known while I was studying there. And one of them just said, oh, where are you headed tonight? And I said, oh, I'm not sure yet, you know. And she just looked at me and she said, well, then you're coming home with me. And so, you know, and I said, no, you know, I mean, I wasn't even feeling like this was God's and the divine answer yet. You know, I was just thinking, no, it's okay. I'm really fine if I'm out on the street. And and she just said, no, I insist, you have to come with me. And so so then I started to realize, oh, maybe this is where I'm meant to be. And long story short, I spent the summer with this young friend and her family. And it just was, I guess, what was so significant, Scout, like I started to say, was I didn't have anything to do every day. You know, I didn't have a job. I didn't have I wasn't studying. And so it was the first time ever since I could remember that I was just able to wake up in the morning and say, okay, what is in store for me today? And what can I learn today? And where should I go? And who can I help? Or how can I just be in the world without having a million things on my list to do? And I can't say I've had many times like that since either, but I do. It was a real spiritually growing time for me. And it just felt like that passage you referred to, you know, where can I go outside of spirit, outside of love? And there is no place that I can get to that's outside of the reach of love. And that's what that summer taught me. I found people that I traveled a couple of times and was invited to stay with people I had just met while I was traveling. I did odd jobs around the house for the family I stayed with. I met up with a couple of friends who were in Germany nearby, just different things that unfolded, found money to do, you know, these different opportunities that I didn't know I would ever be able to do. And, you know, but it was just that sense of relying moment by moment on letting things unfold rather than making them happen like I'd always been doing up to that point. So it was a real turning point for me, and knowing that as much as we try to think we're in control of everything, which I think is one of these myths that we live under sometimes, you know, it was the universe caring for me. And it was a great example of that for me.
So, Larissa, you've done a lot of thinking and a lot of focus into the whole idea of breaking out of the impulse to judge others or yourself. Really stepping back and taking a look at where we beat ourselves up. Because there's certainly a place that if you'd been busy beating yourself up over the change in plans, you wouldn't have thought to go to that service, much less would you have been in any kind of shape to be chatting with anybody, much less have them adopt you and drag you home. So you're doing a lot of study. You've been doing a lot of focus into breaking the impulse to judge others or yourself. So there's a side of that that says, but, you know, some levels of judgment are important. If I'm in the grocery store, it's important to judge between ripe tomato and not ripe tomato, depending upon my needs. But even with people, there's certainly, it's handy to have an accurate assessment of who they are so that you can gauge how to interact with them. How do you differentiate that out of judging?
Well, you know, I think what you're bringing up, Scott, is an important point. This difference, I mean, the fact that we judge constantly, like you're saying, and making judgments about, you know, the way we get dressed in the morning, the way we go to work, you know, just constant little judgments. But the kind of judging I've been thinking a lot about is the judging that comes from sort of one of those inner voices in our heads that is often a judging voice, or we could also call it a voice of self-condemnation or a condemning voice. Like you said, it's, you know, if I had gotten stuck in that pattern when I was in Paris at that point, I easily could have just sat there in my hostel until they kicked me out, just berating myself. You know,
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly.
I may have never gotten up and moved out onto the street, but, you know, and definitely at different points in my life, you know, as other challenges have come, I think there's that temptation to to just get stuck in that repetitive self-condemnation. But so, you know, that's the kind of judgment that is really debilitating for so many of us and so many people at different times. And that's the one that we that I've been thinking about, you know, in terms of just what, how can we find freedom from judging ourselves in that way? And sometimes I think the flip side of that is that we find ourselves judging others a lot. And,
yeah.
You know, I know in my own experience what I'm often tempted to be most critical about with others is usually things that I'm dissatisfied with about myself. And so I think in a way it's just a different side of the same kind of coin.
Mm-hmm. So I confess, certainly a goal in my world is reaching a place where I'm in my center, in my spirit, or call it in a state of love, unconditionally. Unconditional love sounds like such a good idea. But I often confess that it seems like perhaps the last place I'm going to be able to accomplish that one is behind my steering wheel. And when I'm out on the road, where do you take this when you're driving and you're encountering people whose driving skills, attitudes, or attention are not quite matching up to what could be ideal?
You know, for many years, Scott, I lived in Vermont, and for any of you who might be familiar with the state, it's a very small region of our country, of the United States, and it's I remember hearing about people that would get road rage and be really frustrated about what's happening on the road, where I lived in Vermont, there was no traffic. I mean, it just, you know, we didn't have animals crossing the road, but it was that kind of scene. I mean, you would drive over these, you know, pastoral kind of beautiful drives, and, you know, there was never, you know, sometimes you wouldn't see another car on the road for half a day. So, you know, I used to think, what is everyone getting so uptight about? And then I moved to Boston, and I have to say that after a year or two of driving in Boston traffic, which I'm sure compares to many of the cities in our country and around the world, actually, it became something that I found myself falling into, of just getting frustrated with the crazy way people were tending to drive. And, you know, and so this is a place in my own life. I mean, there's lots of examples, I think, in my own life of really having to work on not judging others. But that was just one small example of really having to learn that. So we can just take this as an example. So I'm driving on the road, and, you know, noticing people that are not driving as well. One of the things that really gets to me a lot, I think there's a law here in Massachusetts about not texting while you're driving. I think a lot of states have this now, and, you know, that's one of the things that can really get to me in terms of just judging and being sort of incensed or infuriated with others. And you know, what I've started to do, and what I recently have been looking up, Scott, is that the dictionary defines the opposite of judging as approval.
Ooh, that's a reach.
It's, you know, and it's an interesting one, because when I'm in those moments, it feels very justified to judge somebody who's texting mm-hmm. while they're driving, or and not being safe, or who's driving in a crazy manner, or who just cut me off without even noticing, and I had to slam on the brakes or whatever. And, you know, you feel very self-justified in saying they're in the wrong. What are they thinking?
Uh-huh.
And the sense of approval, you know, you certainly don't want to approve of somebody's actions when they're in your mind doing something that seems clearly wrong. But to me, what that sense of approval means is less of a sense of approval of someone's actions or of what they're doing or of a mistake that they've made, but approval for who they are truly created to be. And I think this is at the heart of the judgment question for me. It requires us to say that we are not only our behaviors, or even primarily our behaviors, that who we are as individual beings in this world is so much more than just our behaviors. Now, certainly the way we act towards others can reflect our values and can reflect who we are. But when we make a mistake, the tendency is to think that is a part of us, that defines us. And while it is important to learn from our mistakes and to not just keep making them, it's also important, as we learn from them, to let them go and to recognize that we don't have to hold ourselves or others to past mistakes that we've learned from, that we've grown beyond. And I don't know if the driver that cuts me off in traffic is necessarily thinking about that, or if he's necessarily grown beyond his or her behavior at that moment, or if he's very remorseful about having cut me off in traffic. But the idea, you know, the idea of lift for me is about getting above what just happened and saying and asking myself, what can I approve of about that person? And even if I don't know them, what that results in for me is just saying, well, I can bless them. I can bless who they woke up to be in the morning, this morning. And even if they woke up having a terrible day, and I have no way, you know, you have no idea what someone else is going through. And I think that's, for at least in judging others or the sense of being on the road. And it's always helpful to me to remember that we never know what someone else has been through that particular day or that particular morning. And that by blessing them instead of judging them harshly, it puts them in a position to feel that blessing. And that can go forward and bless others. And you never know what kind of good that will create, but it just turns things around. And it also puts ourselves in a position to not feel that self-righteousness or that sense of being incensed and being, you know, really tense about what someone else is doing. And I think that that is a challenge in so many ways. I know I've been challenged with it. The road is just a small example, but whether it's families or marriage or work relationships, that the tendency to be incensed at others' behavior, especially when we find it to be rather dismaying, is a real spiritual practice, I think, in a way, to really not hold someone else to their behaviors, because I think it helps us to not identify ourselves as only based on our past experiences. That I don't know that I want everyone holding me to all of my past mistakes in the world, and if they were all if they were all posted on a bulletin board, every mistake I've ever made in my life, and someone said, well, that's who she is, you know, I would, how dismaying would that be? And you know, and I think that's you know, as much as we want to be able to grow beyond the things that the shortcomings that we have. And so I think for me, that's what judging is about, that learning to overcome our judgments of others is also helping to see ourselves in a more gentle way.
I read a wonderful quote the other day that I loved a lot because it said things that took me hundreds of words in a few. And the quote was just, I forgive them, not based on whether they deserve forgiveness, but based on the fact I deserve peace. So there's a place in there that you hit exactly where I wanted to go with that. As you were talking, it's like, okay, if I can shift my practice into focusing on, I'll just use a alternative phrase here, the who they really are, when I'm startled by them, how can I shift my practice into remembering the who I really am when I'm startled by me?
So the question you're asking is that it's sort of like, as you do that for others, how can we also do that for ourselves?
How do I extend that over? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You know, I think, so just to take it, a level deeper, really the sense of identifying ourselves and who we truly are, the question that comes up is, if we're not going to identify with all of our past mistakes and all of our past history, then what are we going to identify ourselves with? And I think that's sort of the crucial question and one that occupies me a lot, I think. But what it says about us is that to be more than just a compilation of our behaviors or our past experiences means that we have to understand ourselves in a whole new dimension. And for me, that's what this spiritual journey is about. And I guess why the reason that you opened with that Paris story, I think, is because I think that was the first time in my life when I started to glimpse what it meant see myself as a being that was beyond just my weight and my hair color and my accomplishments and my identification in terms of what I did in life, that who I was as a being was so much bigger, and that I had barely discovered that. And one of the phrases that I like is the idea of that we all encompass beautiful possibilities. And that was what I was discovering, was that there are these beautiful possibilities in who I could be that had nothing to do with what I might do in the world. And or on any given day or as a career or whatever it might be. And so I think that that for me is one way of defining it. It's sort of the difference of identifying ourselves as a doer versus a beer. That we're looking to be. And I can just share a short little story. You know, one of the times that this really came home for me was, and then I'll get to the crux of your question in just a second, Scout. But I was working in human rights, and I was a really passionate young person just out of college and really wanted to make a difference in the world and had gotten a job at this really great organization and was really eager to sort of move up and sort of see where it took me. And what I was finding as I was working there was that my idyllic version of changing the world in an organization that was doing fabulous work for human rights, I just assumed that the people doing that work for the world that was so good would also just be lovely people and everyone would get along really well and there wouldn't be any conflict and a lot of them probably are. But what I found in my particular office was that some of the folks that I was getting to know were doing these amazing things in the world, but then there was some serious conflict going on and clashing going on in the department where I worked. And that where people just could not get along with one another on a really local basis. Mm-hmm. And I was so struck by that. And I think that, I guess what that has taught me is that more than what we do in the world, that we want to see ourselves as who we are in the world is what makes a difference. And I guess the way that gets back to this concept of separating our behaviors from ourselves is that understanding ourselves from a spiritual basis, as a spiritual idea with those beautiful infinite possibilities, means that we have to suspend sort of our own judgments of ourselves and be open to a different view of ourselves. And I guess where that comes from for me is a view from what I would call an infinite consciousness or an infinite mind. And that's my word for God. And I know many people have many different definitions and concepts of God, some negative, some positive. But I guess I'll just say, to clarify as we're getting into this topic, that for me, God is not a person that embodies human characteristics, up in the clouds kind of shaking his or her, mostly his, finger at us.
Mostly his.
Make a mistake, mostly his, yeah. Sometimes approving us and sometimes judging us at other times. And, that view of God is not the view of God that I was blessed to grow up with and not one that I hold on to now, because honestly it's not a view of God I relate to or have any sense of wanting to get to know at all. But the view that I would call God, and there's many names for God that I like to relate to, and this concept of infinite mind is one of them, or infinite consciousness and infinite intelligence. Those for me are kind of all interchangeable. And that to me is what I appeal to, I think, in my desire to understand myself as being a being that has infinite an ability to unfold and grow spiritually and learn more and not just be a compilation of all of my past things going on. And so I think as we make that distinction, it involves self-examination. So
bingo.
In terms of judging ourselves, I think it means to watch what we're thinking about ourselves and to really be aware of the thoughts that are coming to us and how negative they can be. There's huge books and studies that have been done on unconstructive repetitive thought patterns of judgments that we can get into ourselves just about judging ourselves and how that can undermine our health and well-being in so many different ways. And I think that is, for me, what I'm learning to be more and more aware of and what I've learned over the years to recognize more quickly when I'm getting stuck in a pattern of thought that's a constant self-judgment that's really not constructive. And then when you notice it, if the first step is to really notice it, what's coming, notice those thoughts and how they're coming to you, then I think the second step is to just ask the question, is this part of my infinite being? Is this part of this infinite concept of who I am as a spiritual being? And if the answer is, well, no, then you know, and then the next question is, well, then how can I, if I don't need to identify with this, with these thoughts that are coming to me, what can I identify with? And that, to me, is not a question that has like a sort of a formulaic answer, but it's a question that I really, it's a sense of discovery for me, like a daily spiritual discovery. Okay, so what new things can I discover today? What can I learn about this concept of infinite being today? And it looks different every single day. So I hope is that a clear enough answer, Scout, to your question?
It was a long one. But. It was wonderful information. It went everywhere, and it drew me to another place. So suddenly we end up with two J's we're working with, the combination of self-judgment in a deprecating place, but also self-justification. Because you've just laid out a really high bar of, if I'm beating myself up, do I need to stay with that constant self-judgmental pattern as how I want to identify, or where would I rather identify? There's also the judgment says I can't get beyond it, I'm already broken. And then there's the justification that says, well, this is how it is, and I can justify it. Everybody would agree that, and I'm just as stuck.
In terms of the justification, the self-justifying.
Uh-huh. That'll lock me in place just as well as the self-deprecation.
Right, and you know, and so much of our society reinforces that.
Bingo.
You know, it says that we are the way we are today because of what happened to us, you know, in our past. And I think that...
chemistry, and because, you know, our next door neighbor had blue jeans and we didn't, and.
Right. I mean, there's so many reasons for these things. But, you know, I think the only usefulness of that is to gain an awareness. But once the awareness is there, it's no longer useful. So once we have an awareness of, oh, so you mean the reason this particular, I don't know if I have an example at the moment, but, you know, I think that, you know, you can use a pattern of what sibling order you're in. You know, there's all kinds of books and things written about, like, sibling order and oldest children and youngest children. And I recently read something. I'm an oldest child, and I recently read something. And, you know,
that's
why I do that.
Yeah, that explains everything. Now we've got it.
Right, exactly. And so I think that is something that happens. But I think that once that awareness comes, I think the next step, for me at least, in my life, is to say, oh, so that's why I do that. So now how do I break out of that? How do I not be limited by this definition of myself that I just read about? And I know, for example, when I was in college, grad school, doing my master's work, we looked at different learning styles. And we went through the process of identifying, well, what tendency do you have as a learning style? And so we all got identified in a particular way. And then... My mentor professor said, okay, well, now that you know, great, now you have to work on developing yourself in the three other styles that you're not. And, of course, everyone kind of groaned, and they thought, oh, no, you know, I thought we could just be our learning style that we just learned we were or whatever. And, you know, but the point was that the world is made up of so many different kinds of people, and that we could leave with our master's degree, and we could go off into the world and just say, well, this is my learning style, so I'm just going to teach this way. And if you don't like it, well, you just have to kind of deal with it. But what she was encouraging us to do was to say, once you have the awareness of your own tendencies, now you have the power to change those tendencies or to choose them. Once you're aware of them, you can choose them. If you're not aware of them, they're happening without your conscious knowing of it. But as you become more aware of the tendencies, then you can choose to be that tendency or to try a new tendency. And I think for me, that's where all this judgment stuff comes in, that there's a piece of it that's about awareness, that maybe we realize something or become more aware of something. But the only point of that is so that we can move forward and not just be stuck in one particular identity. At least I think as spiritual thinkers, it really calls us to broaden our concept of who we are in the world and how we can be created, rather than just identifying ourselves with a particular past or a particular tendency, that as we grow, we start to see dimensions of ourselves that we didn't see before. And it helps us see the world differently. It helps us see others differently. And to me, that's the discovery process of what it means to be a spiritual being and the spiritual thinker.
In a human lifetime.
Yes.
Perfect. I'm going to break away for half a second. In case you just joined us, you are listening to Spiritual Perspectives, originating from our flagship station, KEST 1450 AM in San Francisco, syndicated online and broadcast around the world. My name is Scout Bartlett. I'm your host. Spiritual Perspectives is about real life from a spiritual perspective. And our guest today is Larissa Snorek Yates. And we're continuing this conversation about breaking the impulse to judge others or yourself. Our interview with Larissa has been brought to us by the First Church of Christ Scientist, Mill Valley, California. They invite you to visit them or a Christian Science church in your area. You can listen to archives of the Spiritual Perspectives programs on www.ifidknownthen.com.
San Francisco!
This is Spiritual Perspectives. Once more, our guest is Larissa Snorek Yates. Larissa, welcome back. So we were just talking about you were in school and you guys identified your own natural learning tendency. And then your professor said, well, great. Now that you know what you do by habit, now you get to take a look at trying out the other ones to find out which one you like better. And what struck me was if I'd sort of taught myself to swim when I was a kid in a local pond or something, and then I get swimming lessons, it neither makes the way I was swimming wrong, but it also doesn't limit me to think that that's the only way to swim. I might even be able to find one that works differently, or I might be able to borrow from television. Notice, how's that working for me?
Exactly. It just gives you more choices, and I think a greater sense of just being able to be more useful to yourself, to the world, and to others, and to humanity in many different ways. It reminds me of this little fun metaphor that I often think of that used to really strike me a lot when I would think about judging myself particularly. The insight occurred many years ago when I was driving with my dad, who lives outside of Chicago, and I was home visiting from wherever I lived, and he had just gotten a car, and he had just gotten a GPS system in it. He was this was back when nobody had a GPS system, and so he had his GPS, and he was telling me about it, and I was sort of half listening because I was really preoccupied with a lot of things that were on my mind at that moment, and mistakes I'd made, and things I was frustrated about, and the way my life was or wasn't going, and wishing I'd made some different choices, and this and that, and so as he was describing this system to me, I just half-heartedly asked him, well, what happens if you don't go the way she tells you? And my dad, in his childlike curiosity, said, I don't know, let's try it. You know, he got excited. And so he turned the opposite direction from what she said to turn, the way she said to turn when he programmed it. And so back in these days, what happened is the system would go blank for a minute, and it would have the word recalculating ... on the screen. And then it would quickly come back up and, you know, give him a new route. And at that moment, I remember this little voice saying to me, see, it didn't tell him he was dumb for turning the wrong direction. It didn't tell him he was, you know, an idiot for making that turn that direction. It just recalculated, and now we have a new route. And, you know, maybe that new route took us a little bit longer, or, you know, it was a different scenery as we went along. But, the GPS didn't say, well, that was a much better route, the one I gave you the first time. I mean, come on, you know, what are you thinking? And I just realized that to me was the way God operated in my life, that sense of the divine mind that speaks to us, that gives us guidance, that's always talking and communicating to us and with us, that the voice that comes from God, from divine mind, does not come with condemnation or with a sense of shame or blame, that it just simply says, all right, my child, you went this direction instead, let's go, you know, I'm with you. And that's how I picture this divine guidance, that it just kind of recalculates our path and off we go. And, you know, it just occurs to me as I think about this, you know, what would it be like if we could approach our lives a little more like that? That instead of saying to ourselves, you know, what were we thinking, or how could we be so stupid about any particular thing, which is easy to say sometimes. times. But what if we could just say, well, that was interesting. You know, what can I do now? What's the next step? And without that judgment, and I think that's what my teacher in graduate school was teaching us, to say instead of placing a judgment on whether you even like your learning style or don't, you know, just now you have the awareness of what your tendencies are, and you can make a choice for how you're going forward. Or now you know, oh, well, we should have turned that way back then, and okay, life would have gone differently, but here we are, let's move forward and not be bound by that. And I think that is a really freeing place to be, when we can let go of holding on to the past in a way that it's limiting us for the future.
It's interesting because the GPS I have for my car still tells me I'm a recalculant. But I noticed that the same company put out new ones, and I guess enough people made jokes about it, they took that out of it, and it just simply, if you go past the original route, it just simply starts giving you directions on a new route. And myself, I found it's handier if I know I went past my route, so that I can then decide, do I want to go back to that route, or do I want to move forward on this new route? So there's a place where inside of ourselves, sometimes it's handy to actually do an honest assessment of, wow, look at this. I've had this pattern, or I've had this style, or even right then I had this behavior. And I can look at my surroundings and go, wait a minute, that did not take me where I wanted to go. Is that a part of me I want to hang on to or follow?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think what we're talking about here, Scout, is this sort of what I would call an inner conversation with God. And to me, that inner conversation is where we separate ourselves from the things that are unworthy of our true selfhood, of our true divine nature, this nature of ourselves as purely good. To me, being spiritual means we can understand ourselves as pure, as innocent, as purely good, as a loving, lovable being that is worthy of the greatest love and the greatest connection and great compassion. And, you know, and that inner conversation with God is where we find that, I think, and where we can let go of the things that are unworthy of who we truly are.
And that brings me around one question I ask every time we do a Spiritual Perspectives program, because I really like to find out about this. It's a very key word in my world, and I like to find out what others do with it. So, Larissa, I would like to know, what do you mean when you use the verb pray, as in I pray or to pray? What's that mean for you? How do you know you're doing it? How do you know you hit it? What do you do with it? What do you use it for? What's pray to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think to me, Scout, prayer is about listening. Praying is listening to that inner conversation. And for me right now, and I think prayer has changed over time in my life, different points.
I've moved forward a little bit from now I lay me.
Yeah, exactly, right. You know, at one point, I know in Christian Science teachings, there's a whole chapter on prayer, actually, in the book Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures that was written by Mary Baker Eddy. And I used to read that over and over as a young child, and she talks about prayer being desire. And I remember thinking, oh, so that means, you know, the toy that I want, I'm going to get it. You know, that's kind of what it meant. And, of course, that changed throughout the years. But it also talked a lot about gratitude and being grateful for what you already have. And so I would usually start out the chapter going, oh, prayer is desire. I can pray for things that I want. But then I would get to the few pages later where it would say being grateful for what you have, and I would think, oh, yeah, okay, well, I'm really grateful for all the things I have. Anyway, so that's one version. But, you know, I think at this point in my life, I would say that that prayer is a listening process, and really listening for that inner voice, that inner conversation with God. And what it means for me is to really silence whatever other voices are trying to get in. And there are so many in the world, and whether it's, I've got to hurry up and do this, I've got to get this accomplished, I've got to go and call this person, I've got to do this, I've got to take care of this, I have to, you know, whatever that ongoing dialogue is that we have with ourselves on any given day. And so prayer for me is the process of putting to rest all those thoughts, putting, just like closing the door to them, and So the first step for me is just that sense of quiet stillness that allows my thought to be open to listening to what God is trying to communicate with me. And then I think that point of listening is where I usually start. And inevitably, when I can get to that place of being a little quieter in my thoughts, and this doesn't necessarily mean I have to shut a physical door and go into a quiet place, although that can be really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's when I'm driving the car, or when it's when I'm running errands, or whatever it may be in the midst of cooking dinner, whatever may be going on in life, it's just a matter of taking that moment and remembering to kind of shut out all other thoughts for a moment and just hear, you know, what is the divine message for me right now that God is communicating? And how can I hear that? And I want to know it. And it can be a really simple thought sometimes, but that to me is what praying is about, is really first listening and then taking what I hear and using that as an affirmation about my true being and about what's really going on.
How do you take that next step forward, Larissa, of taking what I hear? How do you, just for you personally, how do you, not for everybody, just for you personally, how do you recognize what you, because actually that's a good question in terms of learning style. Do you hear? Do you feel? Do you taste? Do you suddenly know? And how do you take that next step forward of taking what I perceived and moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I think that the first step for me is to not forget it, because the temptation is to have this kind of reminder of finding a moment of quiet amidst a busy life, busy modern life, and then to be like, wow, that was a great insight, and then to kind of go on with the rest of my day, and then, you know, then I'll be like, wait, what was that insight that I had? And so, you know, even if it's just a thought of, it can just be a peaceful thought that comes about a family member. And inevitably, in those moments, Scout, when I commit to quieting all the chatter that goes on a daily basis, and I just really commit to just putting that chatter aside for a second and quieting my thought and listening, then inevitably, ideas come that are things I wasn't consciously thinking about, like a family member or a friend that's in need or something else that is some issue in the world that I had been thinking about that needed some attention. And it'll just be a thought of peace or a new perspective that I hadn't considered constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I guess it's just about noticing those things. It's really just a practice of noticing my thoughts and valuing them, the valuing those thoughts in that moment. Because we think our life is about all that chatter and all of our lists that we have to do. And, you know, and I think the judgment thoughts can be so subtle, like, oh, my gosh, I didn't work out today, or, oh, shoot, I should have done this, or, oh, my gosh, I'm getting behind in eating healthy, or I'm getting behind in doing whatever it is that we are trying to do in life in terms of our identifying ourselves. And, you know, and I think that we don't realize how those little thoughts add up to dissatisfaction with ourselves, dissatisfaction with our lives. And so I think that for me it's as we become aware and we notice the other conversation that is going on, because the conversation with God is a constant conversation. The Bible, and I don't know how many of your listeners, where they are in their relationship with the Bible, but if we can, you know, it has a lot of stuff I know that people are upset about in it, but it also has some really amazing insights in it. And, you know, one of the things it says is it talks about how God brings us his thoughts. I'll just find this passage if you need it, Scout. But anyway, that God's thoughts are in more number than the sand, and that those are the thoughts he has about his children, about us. And that is a really interesting insight to me, because that I have no idea how many particles of sand are on the earth, but that is an awful lot. And if that is how many thoughts God is having on a daily basis, this infinite goodness is thinking about us in a good, loving way with that many thoughts every single day, that's a conversation I am so interested in hearing. And
nice.
I am so interested in knowing those thoughts that are coming to me. And I want to put all that other chatter aside to hear those divine good messages about myself and about others. And so I think, you know, as we practice listening to it, it becomes not even a question of how to take the next step. It's more just a matter of continuing to remember to notice the conversation.
That was just beautiful. Thank you. In listening to some of the other things you've done, and you can find Larissa online, Larissa Snorek Yates, there's a wonderful phrase you came out with that I think I can just toss you the phrase because I'd like to hear more of the thought behind it. But the phrase was the subtle workings of the error in your thought process, your mind, your evaluation.
Yeah. That's a concept that Mary Baker Eddy defined. And, you know, I really, I'll just share a brief story that relates to it. I think when she was writing about healing back in the late 1800s and was based in her deep Christian faith and her love of God, and she was healing many, many people. Someone gave to her a gift of these three brass monkeys. One of them had his hands over his eyes, one had his hands over his ears, one had his hands over his mouth. And, you know, I'm sure you know that those are the, like, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil monkeys. And, and you know, I think someone must have thought that that was what she was doing. And I think in today's day and age, it's this idea, well, if you just be really positive and think really positive thoughts, then no bad stuff will ever happen. You know, like just ignore it and just pretend like it's not there.
That exquisite really, path really of positive. Denial.
Right. And I certainly don't want to say that that's not a good step. But what Mary Baker Eddy stated and what she talked about at that time is she said that's not what Christian Science is about. That's not what she was discovering. That she was discovering that actually healing happened not by ignoring evil or ignoring the word error, meaning sort of mistakes about our true, that true identity we are talking about, the identity being a pure, innocent, spiritual child that has never been violated or harmed, that pureness in our being, that exists in our being, that perspective of us, that is our true perspective, that we don't experience healing by just ignoring things and just turning a blind eye to it, that we actually experience it by facing it square on and understanding the subtle workings of what it's trying to say to us. And so, for example, I think that that gets to this conversation that we're having so much today, Scout, that the way that these self-condemning thoughts, and if they go unchecked, I think they turn into real self-destructive thoughts in many ways. And I guess that's why I feel so, like, it's so important, especially as we're facing sort of the new year here, you know, looking at 2015, and we're all thinking about, you know, what should we refresh in ourselves and what kind of resolutions should we think about? You know, I think that this is a great conversation to have right now, because as little as these thoughts can seem about, like, little berating thoughts that come to us about things we didn't do well, as much as they seem benign, I really think that as we let them go, they become more and more self-destructive. And I think that it's worth any effort we take to really face up to them. And so, you know, I think the subtlety of it is that it comes disguised as our own thinking about ourselves, and that we want to be real aware of how this error about who we truly are, about our pure, whole, unviolated being, this sense of just being a whole, complete idea, that anything that tells us otherwise is what I would call that error. And it comes very, very subtly by just those little thoughts of, like, oh, I didn't do this well, or oh, I'll never find the right person to marry, or oh, I'll never find a job I really love, or I'll never get my finances in order, or darn it, I lost my ATM card again. What? How stupid can I be? You know, whatever it may be, and you know, and I think if we can, you know, just to, I guess for me at least, I know in when I make that commitment to say, you know, I am not going to agree to identify my things with. To identify myself with things that are unworthy of a spiritual idea of God, then it helps me to see those subtle thoughts and how they're trying to undermine goodness, and to just not agree with them, and to say, you know, I made a mistake, and let's just see how this is going to work out and get fixed, and let's keep moving forward.
We've got about 5 minutes, so I'm going to launch you on a 30-minute conversation and see how you can do with that. This one was a difficult step for me, and with the presentness you have, I really want to hear how you took this one. Larissa, how did you break through into allowing the notion that you had something to say sufficient enough that people would either want to hear it or benefit from it, or that it was worthwhile for you to put you to the front of the room?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, Scout. I think...
Because it's right in that same judgment factor.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's this question of self-doubt, and how do we know that we're worthy of having a voice that's really worth listening to?
Yeah.
And I think that it's been a process. I would say that I have been incredibly grateful and blessed by people along the way that have come up and said, "Wow, that was really interesting what you said." And even if I might have been totally mired in self-doubt at the moment, like I said, nothing worthwhile whatsoever. That there was something worthwhile there, and you know, and I think too, Scout, for me, I've really, I guess I'll just share a brief story. I was at a conference once, and I was there as a Christian scientist. It was an interfaith gathering that I was really loving, and when someone heard I was a Christian scientist, they just turned to me with this great hostility, and just afterwards said, "What are you doing? What do you think you're doing here?" And just berated me verbally and openly, just for a variety of reasons, and particularly that we weren't Christian, and you know, why was I here? I was just some tiny little person. Who was I to, you know, think I could be here? And you know, so I did my best to try to sort of say something useful. I have no idea what I said, but as then we got in the middle of it, we got called back to the session, and you know, and at that point, I couldn't focus on what was being said. This was when prayer to me was sort of a listening, but also kind of an affirmation. And at that time, my prayer was an affirmation that God, you know, my little self may not have been adequate to respond to this person's need and whatever they were needing, but your infinite divine wisdom is adequate and is more than adequate. And so please let me not get in the way of that person hearing what you have to share with them, and let them be blessed by whatever it is that you want to share with them. And I guess I would say that that kind of a prayer, Scout, is sort of a putting off of what can feel like a small sense of ourselves, and to just acknowledge that we're not out there to try to impress or, but that we do have a worthiness to be there, that each of our voices is important and we should share it, and we should do it in a way that is confident and that is... that does maybe stand up to things and challenge them. Anyway, long story short, she came up. I then ended up participating in the session and talking a bunch, and she came up afterwards and was a changed person. And she ended up saying that everything I had said in that session was what she needed to come and hear, and that she was very wrong about me being there. And she was so blessed, and we had a long conversation after. And you know, and I didn't think it was me that turned her around. You know, I think it was just that sense that there's a great divine goodness in the world, and if we feel a piece of it, we should just speak up about it. And even if we get attacked in the process, we can just go back. We don't have to shy away from it. We can just keep knowing that that divine goodness and that is speaking to everyone, and that we can, everyone can hear that.
There is no place I can go that can add to that. We're talking with Larissa Snorik Yates. Larissa, this has been an absolutely delightful interview, and the thing that I can say right away to add to what you just said was it's very clear you do deeply feel a part of that, and the words that you put together with it really bring that thought and the depth at which you're striving to do exactly what you're describing, really bring it forward. So you made the comment of, if it's an infinite mind having infinite thoughts of goodness about us, that's a conversation I'm so interested to hear. You're creating a conversation, a set of insights that I'm also so interested to hear. So I thank you very much and appreciate that. This is truly been a delight. And I'm sure that people that find this, and it'll be posted several places online, are going to find they're going to want to listen to what you had to say more than once. So let me just say the easy part here. Thank you so much for joining me and for letting this just be so from your heart today.
Oh, Scott, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And with that, I'll just let everybody know that this is Scout Like Pathfinder, Bartlett Like Pears. You've been listening to Spiritual Perspectives, real life from a, well, spiritual perspective. And with that, I would like to ask all of you who are listening, I'd like to just ask you two quick favors. The first one, treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are. And on any given day, take a moment to notice that it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose. Our interview with Larissa has been brought to us by the First Church of Christ Scientist, Mill Valley, California. They invite you to visit them or a Christian Science church in your area. You can listen to archives of the Spiritual Perspectives programs on www.ifidknownthen.com.